Many of the questions that that I'm asked when I come to speak about Mashiach, in order to answer them, we first have to understand what Mashiach is. So for instance, people ask me, who is Mashiach? Some people who know me from my past will approach me and they'll say, do you believe that he's Mashiach? Or people within the Baruch community will often ask, whose job is it to bring Mashiach? Do we say that everything's already been done and there's nothing for us to do? On the other hand, we found very strong words from the Rebbe that it is up to us to do it. There seem to be some conflicting messages there. And basically, and all the many other questions that are connected to the subject of Mashiach and Gula, but basically in order to appreciate them, and also the idea of, that the Rebbe says we could see that the world is ready. How do we see that the world is ready for Gula? How do we see that the world is ready for Mashiach? So for all of these things, it's obviously essential to know what Mashiach is. So I'll always tell someone who asks me, who is Mashiach? I'll say, well, do you know what is Mashiach? If you have an understanding of what is Mashiach, so you'll be able to better appreciate how we say that the times that we are living in are the times of Mashiach, and how we know to identify who is Mashiach, and how we appreciate and understand what is our role in completing the job. Got a little lower now. You want it lower? Okay, fine. And whose job is it to see to it, and we would better understand how to go about finishing the process of the revelation of and the complete process of redemption. So to start with, there's a story with the Rebbe Marash, that there was a chassid of the Rebbe Marash, the fourth Rebbe of Chabad, that got a permit to do business in Petersburg. In those days, Jews were only allowed to live in certain parts of Russia, and they were banned from the major cities, and only certain select people received permits to be able to, those who could prove that they had some vital contribution to make, the society could get a permit to live in the big city. Now, in order to be able to do business in the big city, he had to change his clothing. He could not exactly go about doing business with his long coat and his quaint little cap. So he had to change into the style of the day. He had to put on a suit with a short jacket and a modern hat. And that's how he dressed when he was in Petersburg. But when he would come to Lubavitch for Yom Tov, when he would come visit the Rebbe, when he would come together with his fellow Hasidim, he would put back on his old clothing. He would put back on the long coat and the cap, and he would go to Lubavitch. After a few years like this, he thought to himself, what's going on here? Chabad is a discipline which requires that a person should be a more internal directed person, a more inward directed person, and that what you should do, you should do 100%. You should be honest. What I'm doing is hypocrisy. I live my whole year one way, and a few days a year, I switch. So he decided that the next time he's going to Lubavitch, he's going to go dress the same way that he dresses all year. Because how could he be a hypocrite? So he had this thought, and the next time he came Shavuos to Lubavitch, he came with a short jacket, his modern hat, his nice shoes, And all his old friends were looking at him, but, you know, no one wanted to say anything. They figured he's going into Yechidus anyway. Let the Rebbe take care of it. So the fellow goes into the Rebbe Marash. And right away, the Rebbe Marash says to him, "Oy vey, what happened?" So he said, "The Rebbe, what are you getting so upset? I realize that as a Chabadnik, the worst thing is to be a hypocrite. So I decided that I should dress the same over here as I do over there." So the Rebbe said to him, "I'm disappointed in you." So he says, "Why?" He said, "Until now I thought that the real you is the way you dress in Lubavitch. And the clothing you wear in Petersburg, that's your disguise." He says, "Now that you told me that the real you is the way you dress in Petersburg, and the sirtuk, the long coat, the way you dress in Lubavitch, that was the disguise. If so, I'm very disappointed." The question that has been facing Jews throughout their exile is, who are we really? We go to different cultures, we go to different societies. To a certain degree, we have to blend in. To a certain degree, we make certain adjustments. And sometimes, we're not even sure ourselves who we really are. Who are we? Within ourselves, we have conflicting pulls. There's a part of us that wants to be close to God. There's a part of us that wants to devote ourselves exclusively to Torah and mitzvahs and sacrifice everything, cut ourselves off from the world. And there's a part of us that wants to throw ourselves entirely into the world, be a part of the world just like everybody else. Why can't we enjoy this world just like everybody else? And forget about Torah and mitzvahs. So many Jews got used to thinking that we're schizophrenic. We're just two different parts of us, pulled in different ways. And the question is, who's the real Jew? So there were many good Jews who thought that the real Jew, well, look how he behaves. If he's good, a Jew has two parts to him, a good part and a bad part. If his behavior is good, so then he's a good person. If his behavior is bad, then the real person is the bad person. Along came Chassidus, and Chassidus said, "No, that's not true. Looking at the behavior of a Jew tells you nothing about who they really are. It doesn't tell you nothing. If you know how to look deep enough, it will tell you a lot. But just on the surface, looking at a Jew, how they behave, is not an indicator of who they really are. Because who the Jew really, really is, deep down, a Jew is totally devoted to God, to the exclusion of anything else, to the point that they're willing to give up their life as an expression of this connection. That's what a Jew really is." At the same time that Chassidus came along and said that message, that that's what a Jew really is, the Enlightenment came along with the exact opposite message. He said, you know what a Jew really is? A Jew really is a human being like everybody else. He has human needs like everybody else. He's concerned about feeding his family, concerned about enjoying life, concerned about culture, concerned about the same thing that everyone else around them is concerned. How come we find all these strange practices that Jews adopted over the years? That has to do with the fact in order to survive in hostile surroundings, in a hostile environment, they took on certain unique behavior patterns which would unify them and keep them together. It became even more pronounced. The Zionist movement said that now that we have our own land, so we really don't need any of this stuff, this external differences that we created between us and the rest of the world in order to keep us connected is no longer necessary because now we have a land to keep us connected. So you have two diametrically opposed views. One view says that the real Jew is totally crazy about God. And anything that you see to the contrary is only external layers picked up in exile. And the other view held that the real Jew is a human being like everybody else. And any indications to the contrary are only things that we just picked up to survive the exile. And the question is, so who are we really? In fact, what's the very definition of exile? The very definition of exile is, I find myself in a situation where I cannot be myself. In my own home, in my own land, I can behave the way I want to. Exile means I can't be myself. There are some other forces that dictate to me my behavior, that limit my behavior. That is, by definition, what exile is, whether it be material exile or even spiritual exile. By definition, exile means that I am not master of my own destiny and I cannot be myself. So the definition of redemption would then be finding myself in a situation where I can be myself. I can be and I can do who I really am and what I really want to do. Then I have experienced redemption. A redeemer is someone that enables me to discover who I really am. He teaches me how to get in touch with who I really am. He teaches me how to express what, who and what I really am into action. That I am, that is fully revealed who I am, that what I do is no longer a contradiction to who I am. There is no longer the conflict between what I do and who I am, which there traditionally is in Golos and exile. That in order to realize who I am, I have to look deeper than the surface. Because on the surface, there's problems. Geula means that who I am is fully revealed, and what I do reflects who I am. And it's clear to me who I am, and it's clear to me how to express who I am. The same thing with the world. What is a world? What's a world in exile? And in fact, our Chazal say that the Shechina itself is in exile. What does it mean the Shechina is in exile? Because the question is, you have the same question about the world. What's the world really? We know that this is a world in which evil flourishes. And in fact, evil seems much more powerful than the forces of good. Evil reigns supreme. So it looks like it's an evil world. Yet at the same time, you find a tremendous amount of good in the world. And as we know, as Chassidus defines the terms good and evil, good means that which is godly, and evil means that which conceals godliness. So in fact, the meaning of the word Olam comes from the root of this of Helam, which is concealment. So the world by its very nature is concealment of godliness. So the question is, what is this world? What's it really? Is it really an ungodly place in which godliness sometimes comes to visit? In which you bring in godliness from the outside? Or is the world really godliness? And anything that seems to contradict that fact is only a superficial concealment, is only that the godliness is in exile. But the real world is godliness. Okay? Before Hasidus came along, most religious Jews, fine, upstanding, observant Jews, Torah scholars, looked at the world, that the world is an evil place. And you have to escape the world as much as you can. If you want to be a good person, if you want to be connected to good, you have to escape the world. Hasidus came along with a radical notion. No, the real world, you want to know what the world really is? The world really is godliness. It doesn't look that way. That's our job. Our job is to reveal that which is below the surface. But the world is godliness. As Chassidus explains that Abraham Avinu says, Vayikra Shem b'shem Hashem Kel Elam, that he called out in the name of Kel Elam. In English, there's no clear distinction between Kel Elam and Kel Ha'elam. But in Hebrew, there's a difference between Kel Elam and Kel Ha'elam. In English, you would say for both, God of the world. But the fact is that Kel Ha'elam indicates that he is the God of the world, meaning he is outside of the world and rules it. He runs it. He has an effect on it. He influences it. But he's on the outside of it. Kel Olam means God of the world from within. The world itself is godliness. Albeit godliness concealed, but godliness nonetheless. So the Shekhinah is in Golos. But the world doesn't agree with this concept. If you look at the world says the exact opposite message. Evil is natural. Goodness is something unusual, something out of the ordinary, something added on to the world. So what's Geula for the world? Geula for the world means that everyone should be able to see what's the real world. Which is it? Again, the world is not being given the opportunity to be itself. What is the world really? It seems to be conflicted. We're saying that on a deeper level it's godliness, but on the surface it's the opposite. Geula, redemption, is when we get to see a thing for what it really is. What's it really? So the Rebbe came along and the Rebbe said that today all you have to do is open your eyes and you'll see the Geula. It's already happening. Look around you. In other places, the Rebbe said that Hashem should help that a Jew should see. Other places, the Rebbe said, all that's necessary now is that a Jew should see. That the world is holding by Geula. You say, 1 second. What do you mean the world is holding by Geula? There's never been so much evil in the world as in today. Jews have in their behavior has never been a greater contradiction to what we say the real Jew is than today. So how are you telling me that the redemption is here? And that this thing that the Baal Shem Tov started to reveal of what's a Jew really and what's the world really He revealed this as a concept. The Alter Rebbe developed this even more on an intellectual level that you could understand that there's something deeper going on behind the scenes. That when you look at a Jew, what you see is not necessarily what's really there. When you look at the world, what you see is not necessarily what's really there. But how could you come, so you could tell me that intellectually that is true. But how could you come tell me that it's actually true? That it's an actuality, all you have to do is open your eyes. And see that the world is ready. The actuality seems to be the exact opposite. So a lot of people are walking around thinking, well, the Rebbe, so obviously the Rebbe meant it as a concept. Because since you don't see it in actuality, so he must have meant it as a concept. Yeah, but there's a sikha where the Rebbe says that a Jew's spiritual eyes already see this. The only thing that's left is that his gashmi is the guys. His physical eyes should see this reality. So what's he talking about? What does he mean? But the truth is that if you think into it, it's pretty amazing, but at the same time, that on the most superficial level, the world is in the worst shape that it's ever been. But at the same time, you can see that the world is ready for Gula. You can see what a Jew really is. You can see what the world really is. At the same time, if you look close enough, the world itself, as much as it's trying to conceal that the world is really godliness, the animal soul of a Jew, as much as it's trying to conceal what a Jew really is, it's not working anymore. Because if you look in actuality, not just philosophically, not just conceptually, but in actuality, you can see that the world is ready. And if you just take a little closer look, you could see who has readied the world. So how do we see that the world is ready? How could we see? How could we look around us and say, when never before have the rate of assimilation is totally out of hand, totally wild. Most Jews have no concept of what it means to be Jewish. They have no interest. And yet at the same time, how could we say, and we have Jews who are doing everything in their power to fight what's right. We have a government now that's looking to pass all kinds of laws against anything religious, against anything Jewish, which was never before in the history of Eretz Yisrael, such a government that was so anti-religious. So how could you come tell me now that the world is ready? That if you look, you could see what a Jew really is, who the Jew really is. So let's take a look. There were people who thought that since the Zionist ideal as a concept, I'm not talking about the fact that Jews have a safe haven to live, is obviously a tremendous miracle, it's obviously a tremendously wonderful thing, it's obviously absolutely essential that we do everything we can to preserve the safety of all Jews in the land of Eretz Israel. We're talking about the philosophical underpinnings of certain secular Zionists, which stated that a Jew is just like everyone else. So there were religious leaders who saw this as a tremendous threat to the fact that a Jew is, if a Jew is anything, is not like everyone else. And they saw this as the ultimate threat to Yiddishkeit. So how did they deal with it? They went out and they made protests. They went out of, they went into the government and they fought through legislation. They try to fight back. They try to put up a defense against the intrusion of secularism into into religious neighborhoods. That's what they did. The Rebbe came along and the Rebbe said, you know what? Go, what are you afraid they're going to steal your children? So what are you going to sit and try to fight and put up a defense to prevent them from stealing your children? Why don't you go steal their children? Go on the offensive. Go to their children and tell them about Yiddishkeit. She says, what do you mean? You can't talk to these people. They've been trained from the youngest ages. They've been taught the worst things about Yiddishkeit. You can't go talk to these people about Yiddishkeit. The Rebbe said, you're looking at the surface. But if you would realize who a Jew really is, of course you can. Because no matter how many layers there are of concealment, if you speak to the spark within the Jew, you can ultimately influence anybody. Because you're not influencing him. You're just helping him or her realize who they really are. Now, the idea of ordinary people going out and making what's called Bali Tshuva is totally radical concept. And we don't find it in anywhere in Jewish history. We have plenty of, in our history, of people going away from the Jewish people. We have stories of great leaders who brought Jews back. But we don't have stories of ordinary individuals being able to go bring Jews back. Because a Jew who decided he's leaving, how are you going to bring him back? Only a great scholar, a great leader, a great tzaddik, he could influence such a person. But an ordinary, there's no such thing as ordinary people going over to other Jews and telling them about Yiddishkeit and bringing them back. And when the Rebbe started with the campaigns, everyone was sure, you can't go. You can't go over to a Jew in the street and stop him in the street. A Jew is doing everything possible to assimilate, to blend into society. You're going to stop him in the middle of a crowded street. He's with his friends and ask him, are you Jewish? And he's going to say yes, and he's going to agree to do a mitzvah. You can't be. That's impossible. The Rebbe said, you would be right if that was the real Jew. But the real Jew is a spark inside that all you have to do is make contact with that and all the rest falls away. So a few crazy people went out into the world and started doing these things, which was totally, it was so out of the question, it was so radical that even friends, people who consider themselves friends of Lubavitch, couldn't deal with it. It was just too far out. How could you do this? They're our enemies. We're fighting them. The irreligious, they're out to get us. That was the posture that we were in throughout exile, that those who are fighting against Yiddishkeit on one side and those who are fighting to strengthen Yiddishkeit on the other side, how could you cross the line and start bringing people over? It's impossible. There's a Satmar newspaper that years ago, it's called Der Yid, that years ago used to print on the front page when before things got sticky, that years ago they used to print on the front page every letter that came out from the Rebbe before Yom Tov, before a holiday, and the Rebbe would send out a letter. So it was printed on the front page of Der Yid. Because they had a tremendous respect for the Rebbe. This was before the Six-Day War. After the Six-Day War, then things got sticky between Lubavitch and Satmar. But at the time, they respected that Rebbe was a world figure. He was tremendously respected as a tremendous scholar, even though he had studied in university, but still. And they would print his letter. So somebody told me that he has in his archives an issue which has a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe on the front, and articles making fun of going out and being Mekarev Jews inside. With all the respect that they had for the Rebbe as a scholar, as a leader, but the idea of going out and trying to get Jews to cross the line, is it possible? To most of the religious world, we are drawn a line, and we have to do whatever we can to stay on our side of the line, give to others on their side of the line, and that's it. We're the good Jews, and they're the bad Jews. So the Rebbe came along, there's no such thing. Every Jew's good. The Rebbe doesn't even let use the term Kiruv Rechekim, bringing close those who are far. The Rebbe says, who are you to judge who's close and who's far? Every Jew is close to Hashem. How could one Jew declare himself closer to Hashem than another Jew? A whole radical shift in outlook. But the Rebbe said, until now, every chassid knew this. You learned Tanya, and you knew philosophically every Jew is really good. But in actuality, you fought with the Jewish communists. In actuality, they fought the Enlightenment. And it was a fight. It was a bitter fight. Conceptually, every Jew is good. But in actuality, you can't tap into that goodness. Only unique, powerful individuals who have access to that inner part of the Jew can tap in. But the ordinary person on the street, you have to fight. And fight they did. Now the Rebbe said, now you don't have to fight them. It's over. The fight is over. Now you have to invite them into your house for a meal. Because we're holding by the Geula. And now it's much easier to reveal what a Jew really is. Who a Jew and what a Jew really is that much closer to the surface. It seems from the outside, you would never dream it. You would never guess it. But all you have to do is scratch the surface. And it's right there. There are people who've been turned around in one encounter. Sometimes it takes more. Sometimes it can take years. But when you have stories of people turned around in one encounter, something's going on here, which is a radical departure from our history. I met a fellow who was educated in the Klosenberger yeshiva system in Eretz Yisrael, and he got involved with Lubavitch. He got involved with Lubavitch. Yeah, a certain mashpia from Australia was once in Yerushalayim and he was fabrenging. And very often the old style fabrengings, they would pick one victim. The mashpia, very often those who follow the old style of fabrenging, they pick one victim and they focus their attention on him. So this person came to a Fabregin, you know, a Lubavitcher event, and for some reason, he got picked out by the Mashpia, who picked him, and the whole night was focused on him. And he was working on him, he says, listen, this was a bacha in Eretz Yisrael, and he was working on this bacha, you have to go visit the Rebbe. Now, there's no such thing as single boys in Eretz Yisrael raising $1,000. Okay, that's not the standard of living over there. But that's what this mashpia was driving him crazy. He says, listen, you ask questions, philosophy, back and forth. He says, till you see the Rebbe with your own eyes, it's all philosophy. You must go see the Rebbe. And he spent the whole night working on him. He has to go see the Rebbe. So he decided, okay. He borrowed somehow. He scraped together $1,000. And he went to see the Rebbe. On the plane to go to see the Rebbe, he davened, and he realized that, you know, if he's going to see the Rebbe, he should do some mitzvah. Because if you're going to see the Rebbe, this is what the Rebbe, this is what the Rebbe is busy with. So he felt it's only right that he should at least do something. So two seats over from him, in the middle, is a more modern American fellow with a knitted yarmulke and clean shaven. And the seat next to him is a blonde Scandinavian. Long blonde hair, tall, real Nordic classic built. So he figures, he'll ask the person in his broken English, he asks that person with the long blonde hair, are you Jewish? And the person says, no. He says, although I recently found out that my mother is. So he says to him, oh, so that means you're Jewish? He says, what? He had never heard this before. He said, yeah, according to Jewish law, you're Jewish. So he said, so how about putting on tefillin? This is all, he has a few words of English, he's trying to. So the person asks, what's tefillin? Now, he's not going to explain, he can't explain him anything, he can barely communicate. He can't give him a lengthy explanation on what tefillin is. So he's telling this person in the middle who's squirming away over there and is wishing he was somewhere else. He's like trying to get him in. He's talking to him Hebrew and says, tell him that, you know, it's a mitzvah. This is what Jews do. So he tells him. So he said, okay. So he puts tefillin on this fellow. And the person asks, well, what's the book that you're reading from when you wear the tefillin? So he explains to him, that's a siddur, that we say, using the interpreter, that it's a siddur, and we say, we pray from this. So he says, I also want to pray. So this person in the middle had an English-Hebrew siddur, and they opened it up to Shema Yisrael, and he handed it to them. Okay, this is a person that just found out within the last 2 minutes that he's Jewish. He says, he's looking in this thing, and he says, from his eyes, start pouring two streams of tears. He says he was just totally, he was dumbfounded. I mean, this person just found out that he's Jewish. He just put on these funny boxes with straps. And he's sitting and looking at a siddur for the first time in his life. Shema Yisrael, which, I mean, let's be realistic, doesn't really say that much to the uninitiated. God is one. What does it mean? And this person just literally broke down.